traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey, welcome back, racing fans. This is Steve Wolf, your host of Flying Turns. That's the harness racing part of our podcast. And with me, of course, the founder of the International Equine Network, Scott Miller. Scott, how's it going?
Oh, it's going great, Steve. Thought about our show last week and all the work that you've done, your articles in Harness Link. What is our update on our Pennsylvania horse racing industry?
Well, Pennsylvania, it really hasn't changed other than both the thoroughbred and the harness people are calling, you know, for action. And apparently at this point here, the feeling was is that Governor Wolf did not know or does not know what the ramifications are if he can move $204 million away from purses in Pennsylvania, and how that affect, it's like dominoes in reverse. In other words, they've all been set up now over the last few years, and everything is really going strong for the industry and for Pennsylvania with everything from, as we talked about before, whether it's a blacksmith or a veterinarian or a horse owner or breeder, groom, everybody, is relying, you know, with these monies, and they're only taking these monies and spending them back in Pennsylvania. And that's what has to come across to Governor Wolf, who, remember, is no relation to me.
I know. You know, Steve, I was just reading here last week that the horsemen reinvest 89% of the money paid into the fund back into their local economy. And that's more than 23,000 people in the state that are working in the racing industry.
Exactly. And, you know, you hate to have to take a political side. But in this case, I think it's fortunate for harness racing that although Governor Wolf is a Democrat, both the House and the Senate, the legislature in Pennsylvania, is Republican controlled. And that they are going to be going to Governor Wolf and showing him all these statistics and showing him what would happen. I mean, Penn Gaming more than likely would close. The Meadows, Harrah's, Pocono Downs, they probably, all the tracks would go out of business. And then the breeding farms would follow, and it would just be a nightmare. And I think they're going to get it across to Governor Wolf because he can send a budget to them, but they're not going to approve it unless there's conditions met. And one of those conditions, I'm sure, is going to be that they can't go after the trust fund. It's actually set up that way that it cannot be, quote, raided or money shifted. I mean, it was established in 2017. And before that, they used to go in and say, hey, we're short this year and we're taking, you know, $50 million away or $20 million for this and that. And then they developed the trust that says this money is designated from the casinos to help the horse industry because the casinos are only at the racetracks. And, you know, that's why it was set up to keep the industry. Plus, there's also the Green Acres program. I mean, the farms and everybody else, they're not selling out to real estate places to build apartments or housing. They're keeping it green. They're raising horses, and they're all putting the money back into the Pennsylvania economy. So that's why the feeling is that once they start working on the budget, that his plan of taking the money from the fund will be ended.
Well, you know, I hope he really thinks about that, because it's just a good example of me being a thoroughbred person. I raced a lot out in Erie, Pennsylvania at Presque Isle Downs. And mm-hmm. That's a beautiful setting there. It's right on the interstate, right on the lake. You've got your Walmart, all your restaurants. And since they built the track there, some of the hotels have water parks there, you know, at the hotels. And, right. You know, if Presque Isle Downs were to close, it wouldn't destroy Erie, but it would really, you'd really hurt them.
It absolutely would. And even with the racetracks, have said that the horsemen have plenty of allies who are influential lawmakers, and they'll be able to counter Governor Wolf. And that because both chambers are controlled by Republicans, who tend to always support things that are being done for the communities, that if they're investing money and it's being poured back into the economy in the local communities, they're going to get the job done. So the outlook is good, but when Governor Wolf came out with that statement, it was really a slap in the face. I mean, it just showed his ignorance of what's going on. Because he doesn't fully understand to make a statement like taking the money away from the rich horse owners.
And you know, a lot of people think that that those guys put it into their pocket. You know, the owners put it into their pocket, but they really don't. They send it out. They go buy lumber at the local lumber yard, you know, for fences, and they buy fuel for the machinery. The machinery, for the farm.
Right.
You know, and that's what it's all about.
I mean, if what's going to happen, if God forbid this goes through, Pennsylvania is going to suffer greatly, because they'll end up going elsewhere, and they're going to end up leaving the state, and the state's going to be hurting because of it. But I don't even think we need to go to those ramifications, you know, what a disaster it'll be, because it's pretty confident. The horsemen are pretty staunch. They have a lot of influence out there. And they'll convince Governor Wolf to change his tune.
What kind of timeline are we looking at here, Steve, before a decision's made or before we hear another report on what's going on?
It's already February of 2020, and we're talking the 2020 budget. So time is of the essence to get this all taken care of. If it's not done within a month, I mean, to be running 3 months in the fiscal year and not have a budget is not a good situation. So I think within a month's time, this will all be either over with, or there's going to be a lot more protesting done.
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. Let's say this budget were to go through, according to Governor Wolf's plan that he has already talked about. How fast would that affect the equine industry in Pennsylvania? Would it take it a period of months, a year, 2 years, or would it be immediately?
It would be immediately. In other words, they would take the money from 2020, which has already been designated to all the tracks, for purses, breeders awards. That's all the, out of the $204 million, I think $30 million goes to breeder awards, and the rest go to purses, promotions, advertising, the tracks do. The money is all put to good use. And I don't know the ramifications that could happen. I mean, instead of racing for, $20,000, $30,000 in a sire stakes leg, they'd be going for $3,500. And there's what can they do? These people have all these horses that they've bred or breeding. They've got them racing. They've trained them as two-year-olds. They stake them everywhere. And then not to have the money to support it, I mean, that's outrageous.
Well, if that were to happen, you would have a lot of expensive training facilities such as parks and Presque Isle and, the different tracks there. And it would be a mass exodus of horses.
Right. That's why I'm confident it's not going to happen. Now, for all we know, in these political days, maybe Governor Wolf is trying to divert, by doing this, divert another issue that he really wants done, and that he'll sacrifice this one just to get attention and say, okay, I'll get rid of this, but now I want to do this. You know, sort of that quid pro quo business.
Right, right.
Well, but that's what happens. But I can't conscionably realize what would happen, that they could get away with doing this. Because you want to close parks, you want to close Chester. I mean, the casino people, you know what? their issue is a bottom line. That's all they care about. So whether they give the money to a scholarship or they give the money to racing, they have to give the money. That's all there is. So they don't have as big a dog in the fight as horsemen do.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, Steve. Would the casino still retain their simulcasting rights to simulcast tracks from other outside?
Absolutely. They own the racing license. And they'll be able to continue it, and probably. I don't know. I have no idea how the ramifications would be felt if this were to go through. It's too out of place to even be considered.
Oh yes.
I mean, if I was a betting man, you know, I'd take whatever odds they gave that you know this is going to go away.
Yeah. Well, you know, if that were to happen, if the casinos were still able to continue on simulcasting, you know, then it truly is solely, you know, singled out the horsemen, and the horsemen would, you know, be the first to suffer from it, and then it would trickle down out into the communities.
Exactly. I mean, I just can't fathom, you know, how or what would happen if it were to happen. And I don't, that's why I don't think it's going to. I think, as a couple people have said already in Pennsylvania, they're going to their legislators, they're getting a hold of them, they're explaining what's going on, and they're all agreeing that this is nonsense and it's got to be thrown out. So you just wait and see. Governor Wolf will end up getting something else that he wanted, and he'll just say, oh, well, you know, I was trying to get the money here, and I'll get it from someplace else. I mean, what he's trying to do is absolutely great in educating young people, keeping them in the state of Pennsylvania for their education, offering them, you know, scholarship monies because of how expensive it is. But in the same breath, while he's helping these students and keeping them in Pennsylvania, he's chasing away a horse population that contributes billions of dollars.
Oh, you're exactly right. And you think about if he wants to contribute to education, he needs to send, you know, some money to the horsemen so we can, you know, establish our future veterinarians and future trainers and future farm managers.
Absolutely.
Like Arizona University does.
Exactly. In fact, they when I was in Paris, they have two college programs. One teaches you and gets you licensed as a groom and exercise rider, and you get hired immediately in the industry. That's the two-year program, all hands-on. And then the three-year program is for track, farm, and agricultural management. And when you graduate from that course, the racetracks in throughout France, the breeding farms, racetracks, farms that grow the produce, they're all looking for people that are up to date in knowledge and have been trained to work in the industry. And so they're feeding themselves. They're creating, you know, the people, the lifeblood of the industry to keep it going. And that's something that we desperately need. You know, having one school program in Arizona just doesn't cut it.
Oh, you're exactly right. You know, and then I just, you know, got to thinking too, you know, like, for example, the Breeders' Crowns, like the Breeders' Cup, it travels around. And you think about all these big, you know, races that you have. You know, that type of thing, like the Pennsylvania Derby draws thousands of people, you know, into the program. And,
sure.
And, you know, and the harness racing, stake races, you know, so immediately that would affect other, you know, trainers. And believe you me, like I'm sure in the harness industry, like in the thoroughbred industry, there is a lot of people that own PA breds that are running in Florida and New York and Kentucky and California. You know, you look at Smarty
absolutely.
Jones.
Absolutely. Well,
know,
some of the best, some of the best pacers and trotters in the sport come from Pennsylvania, because the number one breeder in the history of harness racing is located there, Hanover Shoe Farm.
Yes, yes.
But you know, you have to understand the Simpsons and Russell Thomases and the. Adam Bowden's, the people that own these farms and stuff, these are people of means, and they'll have ways, and they'll get to their governor, legislators, and this bill will go away.
Well, I hope you know, so. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you do. Go. Finish up.
I hope so. I hope they get this bill through because, you know, like this morning I was sitting here out on the deck at Sunshine Meadows talking with a couple of trainers. And, you know, we discussed this situation. And, you know, in the back of their mind, you know, they're on a mission, you know, for the season. You know, to get their horses to the Breeders' Crown, you know, to the Hamiltonian, you know, the Little Brown Jug, you know, that type of thing. But in the back of their mind, they're thinking like, you know, what am I going to do if I can't go to Pennsylvania and race? You know, because they race a lot of horses there that aren't Pennsylvania breds.
Right.
You know, and so that would, you know, take them in a whole different direction. They'd have to, you know, remap everything and see how they would adjust, you know, if they didn't have Pennsylvania to go to.
No, that's absolutely right. And Pennsylvania is a leader. It's an industry leader. You know what? Let me give you an example. Who's the top hot stallion in harness racing, Scott? Do you know?
I would say Captain Treacherous.
You got it, because he's written in his foals and everything else. He's the number one sire. And he stands right in Pennsylvania. So all yeah. these people who have invested all this money in trying to buy captains, you know, what can I say? I mean, what are they going to do, not have any fire stake money to race for? And that's what this bill calls for. So I wouldn't be surprised if by next week or so the governor withdraws that part of his budget.
Well, I hope he does because the owners and breeders, you know, their operations preserve 100,000 acres of open space in Pennsylvania. You know,
right.
And not saying that this would happen because a lot of those farms have been in their families for, you know, decades. If they were to lose, you know, the horse business, you know, all of a sudden you would see condos going up, you know, and business and Walmarts and, you know, everything taken away, you know, that beautiful land that, you know, when you're driving through Pennsylvania is just gorgeous to look at.
That's right. It would all start going away. But you know what? I think we've beaten this subject up enough for today. Let's talk about something positive since last week's show. And that is that the Pompano Park was able to sign a 1-year contract with El Dorado to keep racing going.
Okay.
Which is great news. And in the same time period, but Pompano was only a year, but within a day of that, there was a contract signed for Hawthorne Racecourse. And they're going to add more racing and continue right now through 2020. Right now they have one through, 2023. So they've gotten a 3-year contract. And that's usually what a racetrack gets. Because times change, who knows, maybe the slot revenue increases, they'll get more money. But regardless, I mean, at least in Illinois, they're already building the casino and hopefully a better grandstand. Racing's going to pick up there dramatically. And guess what? If something happens in Pennsylvania, people are going to leave and go back to Indiana.
Right. Well, you know, that's like they got the two tracks that they're building there in Kentucky, you know, and I could just imagine sitting in on a board of directors meeting there. They're watching Pennsylvania, and if something happens in Pennsylvania and Kentucky, they're going to say instead of building, you know, 12, 15 bars, build 30.
Yeah, that's right. They're gonna need it. It's that's why I just don't think it's going to happen. I just don't.
Yeah.
Now, the situation at Pompano, that's different because I haven't been able to find exact information, but my feeling is that El Dorado signed a 1-year contract to race because they're unable to get a summer highlight license. So they have to continue with harness racing, which is a good thing for the horsemen. That means, you know, they have a contract for a year that might last another couple years if they are, but my feeling is they're going to keep trying for decoupling. I mean, the casino industry here in Florida, other than what Stronach has, I mean, they don't want to have any form of racing.
Well,
you know, it's sinful.
Yeah. You know, what I'm thinking is you know, when you see the construction starting on the High Life Fronton, you know that, you know, it's going to be, you know, close to the end.
Right,
you know,
and that's Calder. You know, Calder got permission, and they're going to go through with it. And Dania, well, they had the High Line and Hollywood going to High Line instead of dog racing because the dogs have to end this year. So it's there's only three tracks left in Florida, Gulfstream, Tampa Bay, and Pompano.
Right. You're exactly right. Yeah, because Calder has, you know, their tour with
That's right.
You know, and you know, the thing I was thinking is I know that up in Ocala, they have, at the OBS, they have the racing there one time a year, you know, during the sales. You know, they'll have a race day up there. That's the only day they get. But there are several locations in Ocala, you know, that they could have a thoroughbred, you know, facility that's, you know, pretty much a turnkey to go into. And I've often wondered if they would ever build a harness track in the Ocala area.
Well, I think there's existing. Spring Garden Ranch is a perfect example because they actually can hold. They have teletimer, photo finish. They can actually hold and do hold qualifying races. And back in the day, they used to hold the fair races there. So that's a possible spot, depending on how ownership is, that they could have. But there's a whole litany of situations that have to come forward. In other words, you know, it has to do with simulcasting, and will they get a poker room if they have a harness license, and will the Isle or El Dorado give up the harness license? You know, maybe they still want to have simulcasting, you know, which is pretty easy to do, and the place is set up for it. You know, and be able to continue doing that. But technically, if they get away with not having a harness license, you know, they could still do it. Maybe they can make a deal with someone like a Spring Garden Ranch, and, you know, it don't have to have the biggest grandstand in the world. But the other problem is there's another statute that's been there for some time, and it says that the thoroughbreds race in Florida in the daytime and the harness races at night. So a place like Spring Garden would have to spend, let's say, $2 million on a lighting system. Well, you know, now, you know, in order to get this done, we're talking millions of dollars. And I don't know, I just think it's just a sin that the horsemen of Florida did not get a stronger plate or seat at the table, you know, in a better contract, you know, that would have forced them to promote racing. Because look at Stronach. Look what he does. He loves racing. He wants to have the casino revenue. He's putting in the shopping and everything. He's made that place, I don't want to say it's a gold mine, but it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. Oh. And, yeah, he has the million-dollar race, and he charges $100 to stand on the grandstand. Well, guess what? A lot of people were standing on the grandstand and interested, and they're racing and stuff. They're programmed, and they put money into it. I just wish someone like El Dorado would try, you know, and try and promote the racing, because it's the only nighttime racing in the state of Florida.
Well, you know, look at Gulfstream, for example. You know, they've got the cruise ships. You know, you can come off the cruise ships and go to Gulfstream. You got every level of dining that you could want at Gulfstream. If you're, you know, a guy like me, you go in and you want a burger and some fries and a couple of beers, they've got it. If you, a guy like Steve Wolf that's gallivanting around Paris and all over the world, you can go up to the top of the line five-star restaurant, you know, there.
That's right. Or what are their gorgeous super boxes that you can sit outside and watch the races, or walk inside where they have the table and TV and a person taking your bets. That's what I like.
Well, let me ask you this about Pompano. You think that they're going to be able to fill all the race cards next year, or do you think people might be, you know, saying, well, if this is the last year, we need to get our foothold in, you know, somewhere else for the next year?
Well, I question that for this year, and they're able to fill the cards. And my feeling is that they'll get through because a lot of people like coming down here, breaking their young horses. If they have a three or a four or aged horse, they can bring it down and race it. I mean, the weather has an awful lot to do. And I can tell you, like today, it's the dead of winter, and we have summer weather here. It's like 87 out with the humidity at about 92 degrees. And
yeah.
To me, it's gorgeous. But, you know, you get up in the morning. I got up this morning. I went to the backstretch of Pompano. I saw some of the people there, talked about the new contract and how happy they were that, you know, for next year. And, of course, they're all going to want to come back. And I think they'll be okay. I think people will come back, but we'll wait. You know, we have to wait and see. It's an expensive gamble to move your whole stable because
once you
get there, you realize eventually you're going to have to move back to wherever you're going.
Well, here at Sunshine Meadows,
Well, that's what I wanted to bring up. Are you filled at Sunshine Meadows?
Oh yeah, we've got people. We've got people calling us for more barns, and you know, Brandon was saying that we have, you know, the possibility of building three more barns, you know, to take another 120
horses. And they'll be filled,
right?
And they'll get filled next winter, and there's no question that people want to come down here, and more people will. They are already. I mean, there's larger numbers now than there was years ago.
You're exactly right, Stephen. I tell you one thing, you know, and the people that are calling us are top of the line big barn stables, you know, that'll take a multi-year contract, you know, to get their barns.
Exactly.
Here.
Exactly. Lindy Farm, they're the perfect example. They've been there since the get-go of time.
Right.
And they lease their barn. They don't want anyone coming in there during the off season.
Right.
And now Tony Alanya is doing it. Others, I don't know how many of those of your barns are at Sunshine are reserved year round, even though they don't use them.
Well, just about all of them. All of them are. I would say we probably have less than 150 stalls that aren't leased year round.
Yeah,
that's the great thing about it.
I can bet you, if you put in three more barns, your return, your ROI, return on investment, would probably be 2 years or less.
Oh, you're exactly right, because the people that would be coming would be coming down here for a long term, you know, because
right,
there's
exactly.
nowhere else for them to go.
Right, and they're going to reserve their space. So the owner of Sunshine Meadows, he's going to be happy because whether they're there or not, they're paying to reserve those stalls and keep the place going.
Oh, exactly. And when they come out of here, you know, it's nice because they're ready to go. And I was talking to a couple of trainers here. And they said what they liked about when they left here in May and they start heading back up north, they're so far ahead of the game, you know, that the problem they have is they think, well, you know, this horse is good. We go back up north, you know, boom, boom, they win, you know, right off the bat. Then by July and August, the other horses have caught up with them. You know,
exactly.
They've shaken that winter dust off of them and now they're back into it. And then it really gets competitive.
Yeah, it gets really, really good. And you know what? You got people, a perfect example, Casey Coleman, which I wanted to talk about before. I was by her 2 days ago, and she's looking for grooms. She needs them to come up to Canada. She needs more here.
Right.
They all need help. That's why the idea of doing these school programs to teach people to be caretakers, exercise riders, to be a good groom, what a great service it'll be, and you can almost guarantee they're going to get jobs. And believe it or not, they get in a good stable, they can make an awful lot of money. Because the bigger the stable, they pay bonuses, they travel, they take care of everything, food. I mean, you work hard and you get big rewards if you hook up with the right stable.
Oh, you're exactly right. And you know, the thing of it is to just about, like, say, the thoroughbred, for example, it used to be where we used to, we would leave out of here towards the middle or end of April, head back up north, you know, to Belmont, Churchill, Keeneland, you know, that type of thing, California or Canada, to leave out of here. And now Gulfstream has made Palmettos and Boynton Beach available year-round. and they have a lot. They buy half filled during the summer. And the race program at Gulfstream's so good is they're filled at Gulfstream, half the stable, you know, half of Palmetto's, you know, and this is year round. You know, it makes a big difference.
Right. It's very big difference. And people realize it. The great horse McWicket, who's retired to stud now, every season, Casey Coleman made sure that he got out in the field, probably at Chris Coyle's in North Carolina, his olive tree farm, because he takes care and rests up the best horses in racing. And then they would send McWicket down to Jim McDonald. Even though Casey was at Sunshine with her young horses, Jim McDonald had McWicket at Pompano. And he trained. Exactly. He raced there a couple of times, you know, to get warmed up for the season. And what a horse. What a horse. And Casey said, absolutely, absolutely, we just had to, as soon as he was done racing, off he'd go out in the field, and then back he'd be in Florida.
Well, you know, I hope that the Pompano, they can work some things out. And, you know, as in a thoroughbred show horse business, whatever, it's the breeding program, you know, that sustains, you know, the quality of your product. And, you know, sometimes, I was thinking about the Florida Breeders Association, you know, that a lot of them, you don't see a lot of young people going back in, you know, into the standard bred business here. You know, they're breeding outside of the state. You think that that'll ever change?
Well, the only way it can change is by having a better sire stakes program. In other words, if you're going to want to breed, and you know, there are going to have to be more incentives for Florida breds. And the only way that can be done is through racing, you know, is through substantial purses. I mean, in New Jersey, before Garden State Park opened and was a disaster, it had grown by leaps and bounds. The New Jersey Sire Stakes program, you know, was between Freehold and the Meadowlands, and then Garden State. It was rival Pennsylvania. It was rivaling New York State. You know, to be the harness racing, I guess the state, the best state in racing to be in because of the Meadowlands. And let me tell you, it just grows by leaps and bounds. And then once, you know, if you have a setback, that's fine. But now they're on the verge of coming back again. They've gotten a $100 million 5-year grant from the state. So that comes out to about $20 million a year that they're getting for purses, promotions, and stuff. And now more stallions are coming back into New Jersey. Their sire stakes program is getting richer. They're coming up with more races for Jersey bred horses. It's just all coming back. And the same could be done in Florida if the casino, if El Dorado would turn around and say, okay, we want to make racing work and start putting some money into it.
Right. In a couple of weeks, we're going to, at the Wire, we're going to interview an attorney from up in Pennsylvania. And he's heavily involved in the thoroughbred business. And you know me, Steve, always thinking and trying to build, you know, a better mousetrap, you know, type thing. But I talked to two tracks here in the last week in the thoroughbred business and about promotions and things of that nature. And one of them that I threw out at them is during their big week of racing, the racing secretary would write a card that would feature like the fifth race would be all Florida breds.
Correct.
The sixth race would be all Pennsylvania breds. You know,
right. And
New York
instead of racing for 15,000, because they're all let's say Florida breds, instead of racing for 15, they're going to go for 20,000.
Right. Exactly. And the whole idea was behind this was is that if on the day of state racing, you know, like the Florida Reds jersey or whatever on there, if you wore in your state's logo shirt, you know, like it's got the state of New Jersey on it or a hat, you would get free admission to the track. Mm-hmm. And so they're kicking around this idea pretty heavy because they got a lot of trainers you know, that have these different state breeds, and they said it would be not a problem, you know, to fill those type of rinks. And it would be, you know, theoretically they say that the Kentucky breeds are the best breeds, you know, and then it trickles down, you know, to the smaller states. But it would be very competitive, and you would draw people from those different states, you know, into your track, you know, to say, hey, we're proud to have Florida breeds or whatever.
Well, yeah, that's the next thing. In other words, what it does is it's going to hopefully force people to say, hey, I want to race here, so I've got to get a state-bred horse, whether
right.
they're going for the yearling or they're going to buy or claim a racehorse or buy it outright, but they're going to want to. In fact, I will tell you, in the next year or two, Indiana, which used to be powerhouse track, they used to have Maywood Park and Sportsman Park, and now all there's left is Hawthorne, but Hawthorne's going right at it. In fact, they're racing more. They're building the casino and redoing the grandstand. I mean, they are going to have a lot of construction woes, but in the next couple of years, their program's going to jump by leaps and bounds, where if you don't have an Indiana bred, you're going to have trouble getting in the race.
Right.
Because their breeding program's going to take off. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me ask you something about when you were at Pompano. You know, the tracks do all kinds of things, like Gulfstream has the concerts and the big five-story Pegasus horse. I can't recall the name of the guy that rode the horse with the fireworks.
he was great.
Crowd pleaser.
That gentleman from Australia, his name is Vincent Silvestro. And yes, his Hot to Trot fireworks show was amazing. That he had this beautiful ridgeling by the name of Hand Me Silver, who was a chestnut with a blonde mane and tail, four white stockings. I mean, he looked too good to be a racehorse. But he actually, one night in Australia, he won the first race on the betting card. And Vince Silvestro used that as his warm-up. And then the horse came back after the fifth race and did the show, you know, carrying 2,000 rounds of fireworks on a sulky on the back of the horse. And,
yeah.
and he actually did the whole show. But, yes, absolutely. I don't know if I can get another promo like that again, although
yeah.
I know I'm still friends with Vincent. I know that if I got him a horse ready, he'd come here and do it again. But plenty. There's so many promotions that could be done. And Pompano, you know, it used to have a huge, huge apron when the grandstand was open. And during my time there, we did all sorts of stuff. We had the big family nights. We brought out the mini horses so the kids could touch and see them. We brought out real horses with the Amateur Driver Club, and they would have all the equipment there from race bike and jog cart and harnesses, and they could see and pet the horse and do all that. And the people loved it. Our dollar night on Wednesdays, we'd have 3,000-4,000 people come out. It was all really going good. But now the casinos decided, you know, that the horsemen didn't want a proper contract, and they didn't have one, so they were able to do whatever they wanted, and the horsemen couldn't get any of those extra monies. So instead of racing, back in my day, the Pompano horsemen were racing. We raced more days, but they were racing for $12 million in purses. And now they're only racing for $6.5 million, the monies that they earned and got.
You know, up at Saratoga in the summertime, you know, it's the summer, midsummer derby, they get with the Travers, and, you know, every day is a big stakes day. But you know what gives them the jump on everything? One, it's the weather, you know, it's really good. There's a lot to do there. But they have this giveaway every day when they go in.
Right.
And their clocks or shirts or umbrellas, you know,
what have
you.
Oh, for the people, yeah.
Yeah, and you pay your dollar and get in. And some of the people go through, and they go through three or four times the turnstile, you know, just
exactly.
so they can get the giveaway. You know,
sure, if you're giving away a good hat for $2, they'd all pay, but... Scott, let me tell you
exactly,
something.
You know, and that's where the industry, I think, is lacking.
There's,
and I always thought that I remember seeing pictures of Pompano back in the day when they had like Mickey Rooney was there, you know, or they had a John Wayne or somebody that was just in the crowd, you know.
Jackie Gleason, Whitey Ford, George Steinbrenner. I mean, the list goes on. Ed Sullivan was even in the backstretch, and we have pictures. It was a thing in Life magazine. Ed Sullivan and his wife go to the backstretch, and it was at Pompano, and how she jogged a horse, and Ed jogged one too. And I mean, but that's we're going back some time now, because there's only a handful of tracks left in America that charge admission. In fact, Saratoga, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, I'm trying to think, maybe Golden Gate, I'm not sure. But I don't know of any harness track that charges admission anymore. Well, I mean, Woodbine, Mohawk does on their big night. They'll charge like $10 to get in. But you're going to get a program, you're going to get a hat, you're going to, I don't know if they give a betting voucher or something. I mean, they make it, you know, they're getting the turnstile to go, but they're also giving a lot back to the people.
Oh, exactly. Well, speaking about giving a lot back to the people, I see Hoosier Park's going to have the Breeders' Crown this year. And we're starting off the harness season now. So, you know, what's your take and where should we start looking at to see the road to the Breeders' Crown and to the Hamiltonian and the Jug, and
well,
all starting now.
All the 2-year-olds in training, and then the 3-year-olds coming back. I mean, they're spread out over the country. I would say probably half of them are actually in Florida, at different training centers throughout the state, and they're going to be ready by June to start their sire stakes, maybe May, because the first race towards the Hamiltonian. There's always been the Dexter Trot at Freehold Raceway, and that's usually held the first week of May, and that's when the action really heats up. But just in the last week, for harness racing fans, Pocono Downs, Buffalo Raceway, Saratoga Raceway, and Hawthorne Racecourse, they've all opened up for the season this week. So there's 4 more tracks getting into the loop, and as the weather gets better, more tracks, you know, they'll be coming around. And it'll be season time, but we've still got a couple months until the action really heats up. What I'm looking forward to is the Yonkers Raceway has a great series. It's now the MGM Grand series. It used to be the Levy, and they're going to have 5 weeks where each elimination week purses $50,000 for each heat. And then the final goes for anywhere of $500,000 to $600,000. So we're going to see. Go ahead.
No, one of the things I was thinking, with all this, you know, starting to focus on these horses that are in training, on flying turns every week, we can, you know, select a track and, let our listeners know what's going on there, all their promotions, and get out and visit them.
Sure, absolutely. And, within the next 2 months, everyone will be open, most everyone. And then the action will really start to heat up. I mean, it's always great to see who's ready early to go for the Hamiltonian or for the other major stakes. And come late October in Indiana at Hoosier Park, number one, you know they put on one of the greatest event nights. Them and Mohawk and Meadowlands, you know, they're the ones that do the Breeders' Crown. Pocono did pretty good when they had it, but it's just going to be sensational racing leading towards that. It always is.
Well, you know, what I was thinking, we're talking about like Pocono Downs in Pennsylvania, you know, where they've had that Breeders' Crown there. There's more than $250 million in purse money that's going to be distributed over 406 events, you know, for the Breeders' Crown.
That's including the Grand Circuit. It's awesome. If you have a promising 2- or 3-year-old, now's the time, because on the 15th, of this month is when all the first payments are due. And, you know, I was with Myron Bell, and he had one of his promising three-year-old fillies, a well-bred filly, and she was getting ready to race because they were starting her early because they want to get her ready for the matchmaker series at Yonkers. And apparently she hurt herself in the stall, and now she's going to become a brood mare. But as Myron said, I just saved $3,000 in stake payments by her going lame. Nothing to the fact that she was a $100,000 yearling purchase who broke even, but and now he has a fine brood mare. But at least, you know, he had a positive attitude that he didn't have to make stake payments on her.
Yeah, it's funny you're talking about the stakes payment because this week I've been out at on the deck there a couple times in the morning to my other duties that I have out here. I'd stop by and say hi to some of the owners and trainers and all. I bet I heard this word probably 200 times. I don't know. What do you think? when they started talking payments. I don't know about that. What do you think? No.
That's where if you have the right trainer, he's going to know what to go with the full ones or not. And there's always going to be one that didn't get staked to everything and turns out to be a monster. And in some cases, they can supplement if they want. But when right. you're talking anywhere from $25,000 to $60,000 to supplement, you better be the best horse in the race.
Well, see, that's like with the Derby coming up. You know, we had 387 horses, I think, were nominated to the Derby, right. you know, this year, and the Triple Crown and everything. And, you know, that's probably one of the hardest things to do in the horse business because you really don't know at the time the payments are due, you know.
Go ahead, Scott.
If you go what's in front of you at the time, you have to have the vision down the road to see what could be, you know, but
exactly.
you're dealing with reality, what is for real in front of you. So, you know, sometimes you've got to think outside the box.
And in harness racing, I don't know how many payments you have to make in thoroughbred, but you got to do the February 15th payment. Then you do
right.
the March 15th payment. And in that month's time, now these horses at Sunshine Meadows, we'll use them as an example. These two-year-olds are all going, Pacer or Trotter, around 235, maybe 230 if they're that really good. And uh-huh. but in a month's time, they're going to be down to 210 at your track. And
yeah.
210 at Sunshine Meadows, you know, a horse that can do 210 in March, you're going to keep the stake payments going. And they're going to be able to see. But luckily, the first payment in February is not that much. And March, the stakes go up, and then the May payments, that's the last big one that you're going to make before you can go in the race. And by that time, you know what kind of horse you have. Your horses are getting ready to qualify and baby race. Your three-year-olds are already racing back. So, you know, you have an opportunity if you don't want to make the payments to do that or to say, hey, look, my guy's gotten better. I'm going to, you know, keep him staked to everything.
Right. Well, you know, like with the thoroughbreds here, for example, we'll take Golden Gate Fields. They have the El Camino Real Derby this weekend. And
right.
it's a three-year-old. It's a derby prep race. And you have a subscription. And that's the way it is for most thoroughbreds. You have a subscription of $50. And,
right.
And then it accompanies the nomination or supplementary fee of $2,000 at the time of entry. You know,
right.
And then an additional $1,000 to enter the race. You know, so you're looking at $3,000 or $4,000. But the
right.
good part about that is you know what you have in front of you when you
right.
when it comes time to nominate to this race. You know,
now,
go ahead.
What happens in harness racing is that the Grand Circuit travels, and those are some of the most prestigious races. But they're going to be going against the state-bred sire stake races. So an owner with a promising horse has to stake the both, even though he may not race in both. He's got to pick and choose, you know, where's best for the horse to go. So if this payment, you know, in February is $100, for each stake race, and you've got 15 of them you want to be in. Well, the next month, that stake payment's going to be 1,000. So you're going to see what kind of horse it is.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to, well, you know, because those payments. All I can say is, if you make all the payments and you miss some of the races, well, so be it. That means your horse is good enough to go in the best races, and he's going to make all that money back for you.
Back a few years ago with the Thoroughbreds, we had a horse called Spend a Buck. Great horse, Cam Gambolotti training. He won the Derby and the Preakness. And, there's Triple Crown. Well, Cam decided not to go into the Belmont Stakes. Everybody got upset, but he was honest. He said, my horse can't run a mile and a half. He said, I'm telling you that right now. He said, we're going over to Jersey. And they had nominated him in Jersey, you know, for the Jersey Derby. And if you won the Kentucky Derby and the Jersey Derby, you got a $5 million bonus. You know,
it wasn't that much. It was $1 million.
Yeah.
I remember because I was there. I was living in Cherry Hill at the time. And it was one of the biggest turnarounds that this guy Brennan and his big company and his helicopter and everything was able to convince them, which they were happy to do because, like you said, they didn't want to race the horse at a mile and a half. By winning the New Jersey Derby, was it the Jersey Derby they called it?
The Jersey Derby.
Jersey Derby. And then on top of it, he got another $1 million. So money talks and BS walks, I guess. And he bucked the trend. I mean, he turned down the Triple Crown to win an extra $1.5 million. And he did. So it was the smart move.
Well, you know, like with what we're talking about, like in Pennsylvania, Florida, and everywhere, you know, a lot of the horse racing business is starting to adjust and adapt, you know, that it makes it good for the horse owners and trainers and breeders, you know, and that's like going to some of the prep races for the Kentucky Derby this year. And let me tell you, this is a significant change, and it's going to alter a lot of trainers' road to the Kentucky Derby. Because several of the tracks, like the fairgrounds, have changed the distance of some of their races, like from a mile and 70 yards to a mile and a 16th. A mile and a 16th to a mile and an eighth. Mile and an eighth to a mile and 3/16. The reason they're doing that is so that they can, you know, have a better quality program. And it's going to weed out a lot of horses early on in the, you know, the Triple Crown season. And they're raising purse money, which really helps, you know. So they're thinking about
the horses. Helps, too, and they're going a little bit more distance. I mean, I wish harness racing would follow the Thoroughbreds and do more races other than a mile. Because they're trying. I mean, some of the stakes are say, right in it, that it's a mile and a 16th. You know, a mile and a quarter, and I think that's all good and positive. But I understand that the road to the Derby is getting started, and I think your boy Todd Fletcher's got two going this weekend.
Yeah, he sure does. It's going to be interesting because the races at the point and stage that they're at now offer all the trainers for Bob Baffert, Chad Brown, you know, those type of players. You know, the next 2 to 3 weeks are going to eliminate about half of this field. You know, that are left. Yeah, it's down because we have a race. The Risen Star is from the fairgrounds, and the interesting thing about that is that the top four finishers over here at Tampa Bay Downs drew in the first division of the Risen Star. They got two divisions.
Right.
And so these horses cannot get away from each other no matter where they go. They're still running against each other, and usually that just tears a horse up. You know, he has to run so hard, train so hard, you know, every week, week in and week out, you know, that he's not fresh by the time he gets to the Derby. you know. And
that happens in harness racing too. I mean, these people that start real early, you know, it's tough to see a horse, you know, go the whole season. That's why, like, everyone's waiting to see this horse, Better's Wish, who is the 3-year-old pacing champion. He's coming back at age 4, and he'll probably, I don't know where they'll start him at, because he's going to breed 30 to 40 mares, which he's doing already, and then get right back into training. I don't know if he'll be in the Levy at Yonkers, but, you know, he's going to be there during the heat of the summer racing, and he's got the whole world at his beck and call if he comes back even stronger.
Oh, yeah. Hey, speaking of Yonkers and everything, how are the crowd and the handle at the Yonkers when they do, is it the International Trot?
Oh, the International Trot. Yeah, right. I want to say 2 million, primarily because the races are simulcast into France.
Yeah.
So everybody in all of France can go to a speakeasy and or whatever and make a wager on it or watch it on a TV screen.
Right. Now, doesn't Yonkers simulcast into Yonkers races from Europe?
No, it was the opposite. No. Yonkers would go with an early, like 11 a.m. post time. And the races, only trotting races, were simulcast throughout all of France. That's what they were doing. No, they were not taking the French races. I mean, you can wager on them if you go to like a Twin Spires or something like that. But, you know, it's primarily the trying to get our race signal out there. I mean, it would be great if they would simulcast some of these races, but it would take time for people to really study and get into it. Plus, in harness racing, the thoroughbred harness racing program is the most in-depth thing next to the daily racing form. And they almost don't have that in France. They have a nice indigo sheet that lists the horse. It lists whether or not it's wearing shoes and which feet it's wearing shoes. And you can see its past performance. But they sort of expect everybody to look up everything else, you know, just to see what these horses are. But again, they race sometimes 18 in a race, and the Derby goes 20.
Yeah. Well, what I'm looking forward to, Steve, is to the next few weeks. Next week we're going to talk to a lady that's going to be involved with our Chuck Wagon show.
Oh, good.
That's our cooking show for equestrians, and she's going to have a dessert, real quick, throw together dessert for us for Chuck Wagon that, you know, you can do at the races or at the horse shows. And then, you know, we're going to really get into the Derby prep races. We'll get into the Breeders' Crown, and you can put us in the right direction and start getting people out to see the races, you know, this summer for the harness industry. The winter's going quick here. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, it's flying by.
Yeah, and then we got polo season coming up here on Chucker. You know, and then what I'm going to be excited about is we got like 8 or 9 equestrians there that are Olympic bound, you know, right here in Palm Beach County. You know, and if they can get this flu thing, you know, out of the way, you know, maybe they'll be able to, you know, go to Tokyo or to Japan. You know, for the we'll just have to wait and see. You know what?
Oh no! I mean, we're heading into the primo spot of horse racing, and it's going to be great. It's going to be a great season, especially this year, because I think the weather here in South Florida or in Florida in general has been really, really good, summer-like. So all these horses, and believe it or not, you know, you have to understand there's training facilities up in the Ocala area with harness racing, Spring Garden Ranch. There's other places too. Ron Burke has a place with, I think he has 120 head in there, and they're all going to be heading north, and they're going to be fresh and in shape and ready to go.
Well, you know, we got one horse here, Steve, that we want to keep an eye on to see. They paid $1,100,000 or something like that for it.
Yeah, you know, that's it.
Maverick. And we're going to see if he's going to be a Maverick or if he's just going to be another, you know.
We'll get Tony Alagna on the show, and he'll tell us about it. The horse is training great. But this has been a good show again, Scott. Way to go. And we thank our listeners and hope you'll tune in.
I'm ready for it, Steve. Look forward to next week and everything you got going for the harness business and the thoroughbreds.
We'll be good.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay, that's a wrap.